Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Atsushi Nakahigashi, who is the founder of the food and beverage consulting firms in Kyoto and New York City called Nakahigashi and One Rice, One Soup. Atsushi grew up in a highly respected chef's family in Kyoto, and as you may know, Kyoto is the mecca of traditional Japanese cuisine. Today, we'll discuss how Atsushi grew up in the most traditional culinary environment and his very interesting culinary projects in here in New York and much, much more. Hello, Atsushi. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Thank you for having me.
So, yes, as I said earlier, you grew up in a family of formal Japanese restaurant chefs. So I believe you are in the fourth generation. Your father was a fourth generation. And can you tell us about your family history?
Oh, yes. My grandparents... great-grandparents mm-hmm. started a very small inn in the mountain of the Kyoto, mm-hmm. Which is like a half an hour away from the main area of the Kyoto city in 1895.
Wow.
And my like a father's older brother, which is the third generation of the family, make it a bigger restaurant and change the name to Miyamaso.
Which is really famous.
famous now, yeah. When they started like a Michelin guide there in Kyoto, took the two Michelin star. And my father is a second boy of the family. So he decided to open his own restaurant in Kyoto City.
Right, so that's the history. If you want, the first son gets the name of the original restaurant.
Yes.
If you're the second, you have to open your own.
Right.
So your father, Isao Nakahigashi, and his restaurant is Sōjiki Nakahigashi. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted to go there, but it's too hard to get a table. I have to ask you.
It's a small restaurant, so only 13 seats at the counter and the two small the rooms on the upstairs.
Okay, we'll talk about it a little more later. And so how did you grow up in a restaurant family? Did you start cooking early?
Yes. Actually, I can't remember when did I start it, because my mother says I started cooking like when I was 2 years old. So there's no idea when I started. But maybe like 2-3 years old. And my father started my the own restaurant when I was 11 years old. So, and after that, I started to help the restaurant because it's the family business.
Right.
I think that everybody, when they have like a family business, everybody, you know, help the business.
Right, and it's kind of it's a mom and pop, but also it's a mindset, right, in Kyoto in a way. And so you grew up in Kyoto, and which is the capital of traditional Japanese cuisine, and including kaiseki, which is a very formal traditional multi-course Japanese dinner. So how do you think you were influenced by the Kyoto environment? For example, they say there are 24 seasons a year in kaiseki cuisine.
24 seasons, definitely, yes. And mainly Kyoto has a like a same period, like a four seasons, spring to winter. And for example, in here in New York, like a spring and autumn, it's a very short.
Right.
But in Kyoto, has almost like a same period, like a 3 months each. And so And also, like, water is a very pure and soft water there.
Mm.
I think that's why, like, all dashi, which is a Japanese broth culture, and all, like, Japanese culinary techniques improving in Kyoto City.
Okay. Because I heard, I heard Kyoto chefs went to France to cook Japanese cuisine, and the dashi didn't become like they cook in Kyoto because the water is too hot.
Right.
So that's the secret.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
Like water, it's most important.
Right, and that's why maybe sake is very famous in Kyoto too. Right. Okay, and so your father is famous for his unique approach to food, and can you tell us about his restaurant and his philosophy?
Yeah. So. I actually said earlier, but my father's restaurant is very small, like only 13 seats at the counter and the two rooms on the upstairs. And he always going to the mountain every morning.
Wow.
Even if it's a very heavy snow or like a typhoon came, like he always go to the mountain every morning.
Wow.
And then pick the all wild vegetables and the wild herbs. And meeting like farmers, old farmers, and then picking the vegetable by himself, and bring like bring the voice of the nature back to the restaurant every morning.
Wow! So he is kind of a forager too.
Kind of, yes. Like, so sometimes going to the like deep mountain in a different prefecture and picking like mushrooms for the autumn.
Okay.
Yeah, and then mainly his signature dish is actually like a white rice. That's the most important thing. Like white rice is a very like a natural flavor from the rice and the water.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Right. So, you know, the rice is, of course, I mean, in this country, rice is known as gluten-free and it's, you know, carbs. And people are just talking about different aspects of rice. But in Kyoto, rice is almost the essence because it's the base for any kind of other dishes.
Right.
Okay, so by the way, I think your father's Sojiki Nakahigashi restaurant, they have Michelin star.
Yes, there are two Michelin stars.
Right. Now, yes. Amazing. Wow. Okay, so it's the philosophy is local and sustainable, and he's been doing it for years and years. Right. So the one thing I'm fascinated by Kyoto cuisine is the kyoyasai, which is a term for heirloom vegetables originating in Kyoto. Prefecture. So maybe you can give us some examples on how you use them.
Right. So actually Kyoyasai, which is a Kyoto vegetable, it's have 36 kinds of there.
Wow.
It's too many actually. And some vegetable is not really grown in Kyoto anymore, but it has 36 kinds now.
Right.
And my favorite one is a shogoin daikon, which is like a big round daikon radish. Or Kyoto carrot, which is a red carrot. Recently, I can find a Kyoto carrot in the farmer's market in the Union Square. Yeah.
Really?
And, yeah. My favorite is the shogoin daikon because it's like much softer than the regular daikon. And when you cook the regular daikon, you have to boil first because it's hard, actually. You have to boil first. Then put the soy sauce or sugar and for the cooking. But for Kyoto daikon, shogoin daikon is soft already, so you don't need to boil first. You can cook with any other meat and put the soy sauce from the beginning and then get soft.
Oh, wow. So the flavor is the same
as
daikon?
Yeah, it's actually more flavor and more like a sensitive flavor, and texture is much like a lighter and how can I say, like a soft.
More subtle.
Right.
And well, I heard that kyoyasai has more minerals, fibers, and vitamins than any other vegetables, according to research projects. I don't know what it is, but...
Right, I think so. But when I have the vegetable in the United States, I felt it's totally different vegetable from Kyoto. Kyoto have, like, I told you, like, before, but the water is very soft. And the soil is more, like, small. So, and I think, like, the soil has, like, less mineral than American soil. And that makes, like, vegetable have a lighter flavor. And I mean, like, a gentle flavor.
Rounded.
And, yes.
Right.
And it's also the humid temperature, I mean, the air. So the old leaf is softer than the other vegetables.
Okay, right. And the Kyoto weather is very harsh in the summer and harsh in winter too. So it's like extreme temperatures and so they're trained to survive maybe. Okay. So by the way, did you always wanted to be a chef?
not really, actually. I knew that I would be chef one day because I grew up in a restaurant family. The cooking is too natural, so I couldn't imagine working like a job for like a cooking. The cooking is too natural for me.
It's part of you.
Yes.
So and when and why did you come to New York then?
When I was like a high school student, I was really like to fish. And like bass fishing. And my friend told me like if you like to do like bass fishing, you should go to the United States. And I was thinking like maybe I will be a chef one day, but I knew that if you work for like a restaurant industry one day, then you cannot do anything anything else because you work from the early in the morning to the late night, 7 days a week.
Basically.
So it's very typical Japanese mind, but yeah, that's true. So I decided to come to United States to be like a professional bass fisherman for 5 years.
Wow.
I decided to try 5 years, and if I become to like a very famous fisherman, then maybe I can try to do it for my like rest of the life. But then if not, maybe I can move to the culinary world again. Then I did like 5 years for the professional bass fisherman. And at that moment, my friend asked me, the Japanese restaurant will open in New York City. And then I was decided to come to New York.
Okay. Right. So how good were you as a bass fisher? You're good in fishing?
Yes. Like finally, like 2007 and 2008, I was competing in the professional category and tournament, and went to like so many different states for competing the fishing tournament.
Wow. So do you still fish?
Sometimes, yes, at the Central Park, obviously.
Okay.
And Ship's Head Bay as well.
Right. But I'm sure it contributes to your, you know, knowledge how to handle fish as well.
Right. How to handle and how to like talk with nature. That's more important.
Ah, okay. Great. So so why did you decide to pursue a career in cooking? Like, you know, you knew that there's a Japanese restaurant opening, but you're mentally getting ready?
Yeah, because when I was at like a fishing tournament, I have to cook for me and for my friend as well. So I was traveling with my car, van, and a boat and all over the United States. And I cooked for some of my friend or like a typical American people in the countryside of Japan. I mean, countryside of the United States, who really don't know about the Japanese cuisine. You know, if I ask them what's the Japanese cuisine, and they answer, "Oh, maybe sushi and teppanyaki." That's it. So I cooked them. Then they said, "Wow, that's good. It's very natural and very gentle taste, but I really like it." Then I decided maybe it's very fun to cook in the United States. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So it's kind of a clean slate, and you just educate people. That was the beginning. Right. So you worked at a Kajitsu restaurant, right? That opened initially in East Village. So what kind of restaurant was it?
The Kajitsu is a Shojin cuisine. Yes, the Shojin cuisine is actually a very easy explanation. It's a Japanese vegan style restaurant.
So, because it originally came from Buddhist temples.
Yes.
Right. And I heard that the Buddhist temples they used to be open to visitors from the general public, and they might be serving as a like a restaurant. The food if it comes to the temple. Okay. So what did you learn at the Kajitsu restaurant?
So Kajitsu is a Shojin cuisine, and they're using the only vegetable. And when they opened in the East Village in 2009, It was a very small location, and now they moved to the Midtown, the 39th Street. Mm. But that was actually like a first time to cooking with only vegetable for me, and all other chefs as well. When the first chef started there, and nobody had experience with the Shaoxing cuisine. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to like experiment every day for all ingredients.
Okay.
And we have to change like a menu for every month. Mm. That was very hard. And but also we learned so many things from those vegetables, because the vegetable season is also different from Japan.
Right.
For example, daikon. The usually winter season is the best days in Japan, but here like it's too cold. So like sometimes when we open like a box, the daikon is already frozen.
Wow.
And broke.
Mm.
So that was a difference, and we learned so much difference.
Mm. So like we talked earlier, the kyoyasai is really often used in Kyoto, but here you don't have kyoyasai.
Right.
So you have to learn everything.
Right.
Right. Wow. That's great. And then eventually, Kajitsu got a Michelin star.
Right.
Right. So that's an amazing achievement. Congratulations. Right. And then, so now you became the sous chef and the manager.
Yes.
Right. So you didn't manage restaurant before. What was your experience?
My mother was the manager for like my father's restaurant. So I saw that how you can manage, but it's still a family business. It's a small restaurant.
Mm.
And then when I was back and forth United States and Kyoto, when I was fishing, when I was in Japan, I was helping my father's restaurant as a kitchen staff, and also working for the hotel as well for trying to use English as much as I can. So that's why I decided to work in the hotel as a service side. Then
okay.
I learned like a service and the management as well. Then after I worked for Kajitsu, I was work as a sous chef. And then when they moved to the Midtown, there was no manager. And I decided to maybe I can be the manager and also like sous chef, then I can have more like an opportunity to do more job.
Right. Okay. So, and then eventually last year, you left Kajitsu.
Right.
And now you have your own companies called Nakahigashi in Kyoto and One Rice, One Soup in Inc. in New York City. So what is the concept of each business? And first, what is Nakahigashi?
So Nakahigashi doing like a restaurant consulting in Japan and United States, and also a promotion Japanese product, Japanese food product in outside of Japan.
What kind of products?
So we have something different. Mainly I have the lots of product from Hiroshima Prefecture. The company name is it's kind of unique, like Seto Teko, which is an iron factory.
I was wondering what.
Iron factory is using making a food product now, because the founder of the company, I was wondering that like recently the old children broke their bone very easily because less calcium and and they found like their technique of like making the iron, like a pressed iron. Then they press like fishes and they press the fish and make it like a cracker with 100% fish, then bring to their like a school.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then all children ate those crackers, then like their health feeling better.
Wow.
Yeah, so they started like pressing like their product, including the fish, vegetable, rice. And that's very unique technique. And I believe any chef can do it in the kitchen because it's super high temperature, and a very like a short period, like a 500 degree and 1 or 2 seconds, just press. And all because it's a high temperature, so all bacteria go out, but they're still like all nutrients stay there in the the product.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So is it the machine that you are promoting or the actual product that was pressed?
That's just product.
Okay. Mm. Wow. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, one day, yes.
Right. So I'm an old woman, especially. It's going to be a big hit, too.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. And then, but what's the, you know, motivation to start the Nakahigashi? I mean, you wanted to promote that kind of unknown ingredients, right? But what other business do you do at Nakahigashi?
Yeah, it's a restaurant consulting, because when I was working at Kajitsu, I was a sous chef and a manager, and I worked at the counter of the Kajitsu. And then, you know, there was, because it's the old Japanese chef work in the restaurant after graduate the high school, so usually people don't have time to study English.
Mm.
And all chef of Kajitsu are from Japan.
Mm.
So they can't talk to the customer. So since they open, I was almost like I was the only person who speaks English. Then I went to like a customer to explain all like a Japanese culture and the Japanese food.
Right.
Or Japanese style.
Right. Then so you're the only window to show food.
Yeah, and also for like telling to the our servers as well.
Mm.
So I was always like telling the old Japanese culture, because I grown up in Kyoto, so I know like the old base.
Mm.
So I think that was easy for our chef and easy for server.
Right.
It's easy for owner, because the owner wanted to tell like everybody what the Japan is. So then I figured out the how interesting it is, like how to like explain the American people or other like all people from all over the country.
Right. Yeah. Everyone wants you, like Japanese restaurants in New York City, basically. Right. So, but also, and you do the same business at the Nakahigashi in Kyoto, right?
Right.
And you help Japanese restaurants in Kyoto?
Yes. So first, when I started the Nakahigashi in Kyoto, there is no client, of course.
Mm.
So I asked my father, do you need this? And then, yeah, and he said, why not? Because many people now going to Japan from all over the world.
Mm.
And they are trying to have the Japanese cuisine in Japan and Kyoto. And but still, like many people and many chefs cannot speak English in Japan and Kyoto. And they just serving the food for the foreigner. And I was thinking, that's like not good for like both of restaurant and customer, because when I went to France, I was planning to stay there 4 days and go to the restaurant as much as I can, like 8 restaurants or 10 restaurants
a day.
Right, a day.
Right.
Right. And I was thinking that foreigner come to Japan like 13 hours from New York and then trying to get the restaurant as much as they can, then the experience, it's if not like 100% good experience, it's not good for the customers and it's not good for the restaurant. So I thought if I can make like an English menu at least, or telling the old train the staff how to approach to the American or like foreigners, then maybe like a restaurant can do like a better service for the all customers, and also customer can have more like a good experience at the restaurant, and then they will know like a more like a deep Japanese culture or the culinary world. Then
right.
I thought, it's going to be happy for me.
Right.
That's why I started.
Okay. Yeah, actually, I think Japan had the record number of tourists recently. Right. And I think I saw a survey that the top reason going to Japan is for food.
Yes, I heard that.
It's very important that you're
yes,
doing
it.
Yes,
it's very important.
Right. Okay, so let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about this fun project to educate us about Japanese cuisine. So okay. Please stay with us.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by RecTech, and this track is called Dues Paid.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from our studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Atsushi Nakahigashi, who is the founder of the food and beverage consulting firms in Kyoto and New York City called Nakahigashi and One Rice, One Soup. Atsushi grew up in a highly respected chef's family in Kyoto. So we talked about Nakahigashi, and now what is the concept of One Rice, One Soup in Inc., which is based on New York?
Yes, so One Rice, One Soup, Inc. Is also doing the restaurant consulting and Japanese promotion of the Japanese product. Yes.
Okay. So what is the difference? So base is just a bit different place.
Base is actually different, but I really wanted to do it like a One Rice, One Soup, Inc. This year. Then luckily I started this business from May. Mm-hmm. And firstly, I have to do it in Japan. That's why I tried to do it in Japan first, then came back to United States, then opened like One Rice, One Soup, Inc. first. Mm. Yes, and basically it's like spreading the Japanese culinary world to the United States and all over the world later.
Okay, right. So there should be a reason, One Rice, One Soup. So why did you name it as this company's name?
Because when I back to Japan last year after I left Kajitsu, I was talking to my father, I want to do it like this style of business. Mm. And talking for like a very late night until like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. Mm. And then suddenly he said, "Oh, let's do One Rice, One Soup." He never speaks English, and he don't know what the meaning is, but the sounds was good. And I thought, okay, maybe I can do like a One Rice, One Soup for the company name and also my project name. So I started like a One Rice, One Soup project last year. Mm. And because Japanese, like the basic style of the like a meal is always white rice on the left side, mm-hmm. and the soup is always right side, mm-hmm. and the pickles. That's very like a traditional Japanese for like a regular people in Japan for a long time.
Mm. Right. It's so over time it developed into like Ichijū Sansai, the one rice, one soup, pickles, and three other vegetable dishes.
Right.
But that was not for everybody, mm-hmm. for ordinary people.
Yeah, that was too gorgeous for like regular people.
Right. And it's a lot of work, right? Like three dishes. It's a lot of work.
Right.
Right. So by having a one rice, one soup, how do you educate Americans or non-Japanese people with the concept?
Yes, so basically, firstly, I want to say always rice is on the left, always soup is on the right, mm-hmm. and the pickle is on the top. That triangle is a very basic Japanese cuisine.
Mm.
Because when we are like a small kid, the parents always say, what is the left hand for? Mm. And then we say, oh, left hand is for holding the bowl.
Mm.
What is the right hand for? Holding the chopsticks.
Mm.
That's, I think, a Japanese culture.
Right.
Everybody say that. So I think all Japanese culture is based like that, like a triangle, I think.
Mm. Right. And if you have more dishes, rice is always the base. To neutralize the flavor, and my parents told me to sip the soup first to wet your chopsticks,
right.
And then move on to the rice because it doesn't stick to it. It's like kind of really a lot of rituals, but I think it's very meaningful
mm-hmm.
for Japanese people. All right, and you had a very interesting pop-up project earlier this year called Taberu. Taberu means eat.
Yes.
At Saikai Bar in New West Village. And I truly enjoyed lunch there. So can you tell us, listeners, what it was?
Yes. The Taberu was started in late March this year and finished late May. So it was like a two-month project. And that pop-up restaurant, that was my idea because... I'm actually consulting a restaurant called the Saikai Dining Bar of West Village now, and they didn't open the lunch. And I thought, oh, maybe I can do myself on the lunchtime for a pop-up. Then I can show Japanese style is for many people as much as I can. And then I try to call Taberu and using rice and soup and pickles, basic.
Mm, right. And you have other dish, right?
Yes, yes. So I try to, one course is one rice, one soup, which has a bowl of rice, bowl of soup, and pickles. And a customer could choose a first course or second course if they like. Then I made a vegetable dish or meat dish or a fish dish before the one rice, one soup.
Mm, right. So I actually have the menu. And that was so good. I saved it. So three courses, it's $23.
Right.
And then, with white rice, choice of soup, and homemade pickles.
Mm-hmm.
And the three options, one is springy acai garden, house-made tuna, prosciutto, and Arabic vegetables, and one rice, one soup. That's the simplest version. And the sushi course. So the garden dish and the one rice one soup and the little dessert kiwi with the gyokuro and goma tofu.
Right.
And the full course is the spring acai garden again and the grilled Arctic char with citrus. And I think I had it. I couldn't even. I had another one. So, right. So what kind of people came to Taberu?
I surprised actually. New York Times, lucky New York Times featured this Taberu project.
Mm.
And then we got so many different type customers because I tried to price, easy price.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I put the one rice, one soup for right. $12 only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then I wanted attractive for all people who are interested in the Japanese culinary.
Right.
So we had so many different
types. Mm. Right, the three courses, $23, and four courses, $35. Mm-hmm. So that was, I hope you're going to do it again sometimes.
Right.
Right. So the mostly American people came or Japanese people came?
Mostly American people came, yes.
So that's the concept that we wanted to educate people.
Yes.
Do you think they understood?
I hope so. And I tried to talk to the customer, and I hope they understand at least just a little bit, you know, base things like rice soup and pickles, the base things. I think that's the okay for at this moment.
And now you run your own business in New York City. So how is it important to have, you know, grown up in Kyoto and where traditional Japanese kaiseki, and then, you know, this kind of concept, it's natural for you, right? Do you feel a gap?
Yes, it's actually Kyoto and New York City is a totally different city. Mm-hmm. New York is super traditional and a very protective.
Mm.
So if people do something like a crazy in Kyoto, people say, oh, wow, that's not good. But here in New York, everyone do different things. You know, it's very creative and more like a much powerful and energy. So, yeah, I like both sides.
Right. So, you know, based on the difference, what kind of thing do you think American people, New Yorkers, do not understand about Japanese cuisine at this point?
Yes. It's very difficult because the United States is a big country. For New York City, 10 years ago, and now it's also different. And but when I was fishing and traveling to the different city in the United States, I couldn't find a very simple regular Japanese cuisine.
Mm.
And also when I order rice and the soup, they always serve the spoon.
Mm.
That was very weird for me because the Japanese is always eat with the chopsticks,
right,
even for soup.
Mm.
Just slap the a soup,
right,
with the chopsticks. So that's the base for Japanese cuisine, I think. So I'd like to show non-Japanese people basis eating with chopsticks.
Mm.
That's the very important things.
Right.
So when I consulting the restaurant in United States, I try to do not serve a spoon with four soups.
Okay. It's interesting because I happened to get a new pair of chopsticks, which I love, and I started to use it every day. And sometimes I use spoon, sometimes I don't. And then chopsticks takes more time.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate it. And I have more flavor in my mouth too.
Ah, right.
So there's a reason that maybe it takes time. And then enjoy, that's better. And chopsticks, it's by itself is very functional. Right? You can just pick up a piece of grain, one grain of rice. So, yeah, I think everybody should start using chopsticks more in this country.
Right.
Maybe better for diet, slow eating.
Yeah. I think so.
Right. Okay, so at this point of your life, how much are you influenced by your father, you think?
So much, a lot. Even for a company name,
you know? Right.
So my base, my blood's made by I think Kyoto water and the Kyoto traditional culture, and from my father's cooking style.
Local sustainable
and be natural and don't break natural flavors. That's the
And one thing you mentioned earlier before the show, just chatting about rice, right? So rice is the essence of Japanese cuisine. That's his philosophy too.
That's his philosophy too.
Mm.
Rice is the most important. And one more reason, it's not a joke, but in Japanese character, if we write the United States, it's rice country.
Right.
I think that's one more reason that I'd be here. I'll be here.
That's the destiny. Right. Okay. And how are you advancing what you learned from your father?
I think people have to surpass for everybody, for from the older generation, because all cooking technique are improving, and all ingredients also like a flavor getting improving, and there's so many different cuisine culture is mixing right now. So I think I can do more things based the rice, but still I can improve the many things here in the United States.
Right. Okay. So what is your plan for the next?
So my plan is that I'd like to do more pop-up in the United States, and also helping the restaurant in the United States as well. Then I'd like to try to the people who doesn't know like a Japanese food culture and the food culinary world. I want to show them like as much as I can.
Because one rice, one soup concept is very simple, right? And American tables tend to be simpler, like one bowl or kind of thing. So you can really be creative and apply the Japanese concept.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So thank you for joining us today, Atsushi.
Thank you.
So listeners, if you'd like to know more about Atsushi's activities, please visit One Rice, One Soup Project.com. That is all one word, One Rice, One Soup Project.com. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at japaneseats@heritageradionetwork.org. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays, always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes and Stitcher podcasts. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. And today's show was made possible by Pierre Bien-Aimé. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.